presidency of Mr. Thabo Mbeki, Dr. Penuel Maduna was appointed Minister of Justice when Advocate Bulelani Ngumba was appointed Director of Public Prosecutions. The two appeared on national television talking about a prima facie but unwinnable case against then Deputy President Jacob Zuma. There was a public outcry about the use of state institutions to fight factional battles within the ANC. This narrative led to the withdrawal of charges against President Zuma. Since then, we have had the involvement of the NPA with the case of Mr. Mduli, which was also perceived to be related to factional battles in one way or another. The handling of this matter, by advocates Mukwebi and Jiwan, tarnished the image of the NPA, leading to their removal from the role of practicing advocates. The handling of the McBride case and that of Minister Pravin Gordhan resurrected claims that state institutions are utilized to fight factional battles within the ruling party. The committee is concerned about this turn of events because the independence and credibility of the Office of the Director of Public Prosecution lies at the heart of the criminal justice system in our constitutional democracy. Our concern with our office advocate Sean Abrahams rises from the suggestions that your office has also been captured to fight factional battles within the ruling party and in struggles for the control of the national treasury. These matters have been exacerbated by the release of the state of the captured plot, which may implicate some ministers in corruption. Those who claim that your office has been captured for factional battles are doubting your independence in dealing with these matters, as they believe you are also captured. They cite your meeting with President Zuma and Minister Masuta at the City House as an indication of this. But the committee is also worried about the growing tendency on the part of some sections of society, even amongst political parties, not to allow due processes of law to take their course, and also disrespect for the processes of this parliament. I have in my possession a letter dated the 3rd of November 2016, addressed to you by Honourable Member Breitenbach. Honourable Breitenbach should, if she wanted any information from you as a member of this committee, should have approached the chairperson of this committee and request that information so that I direct the request to you. So this is not acceptable. Secondly, at the last, I'll give you everybody a chance to say what they want to say. Now is my time to say what I want to say. At the last meeting, you, Advocate Abrahams, raised objections against the participation of Honorable Breitenbach in the proceedings because there is a matter before the court pending against her. And we sought legal opinion from Parliament lawyers, and the opinion says that it is perfectly in order for Honorable Breitenbach to participate. So I hope that that matter will not rise again in this meeting. But also, I want to say from the outset that this meeting has not been called for political battles. This meeting has been called to afford you an opportunity to talk. talk to Parliament and to the people of South Africa about the turn of events, because this Parliament and the people of South Africa cannot afford to have any organization like the Office of the Director of Public Prosecution, which is not independent and credible, or is not seen as independent and credible, because this office lies at the heart of our criminal justice system. So this is your opportunity to tell the people of South Africa if they can trust this office, and trust its independence and its credibility, because our democracy will rise and fall by what that office does. Before I give you the platform, I want Honourable Rittenbach to say what she has to say.
Thank you. The letter that I wrote to the National Register was requesting the record of decision in this particular matter. It was done in my capacity as the DA spokesperson for justice and had nothing to do with this committee. And I certainly don't need to direct those letters to this committee. Thank you. Secondly, I would like to suggest that you give some consideration to, in terms of Section 167 of General Powers conferred upon committees, Section 167A, to ask Mr. Adams if he's prepared to give this briefing to the committee under oath.
Honourable Rittenbach, I just want to read what you wrote for record purposes. You say, agent request for record of decision, prosecution of Messias Gordon, Pipile, and Mahashula, with reference to the above matter, as well as planned meeting of the Portfolio Committee of Justice and Constitutional Development held on the 4th, 10th, 2016. Kindly take note that in order for Parliament to properly exercise an oversight function, this is mandated in terms of Section 35(1) of the National Prosecuting Authority Act, Act 32, of 1998. We kindly request you to urgently ahead of your appearance before the Portfolio Committee tomorrow, make public the record of your office's decision to proceed with the above mentioned prosecutions. Kindly also bring a copy with you to the committee meeting. Without the above-mentioned record in the public domain, we believe that Parliament will not be able to properly fulfill its duties. Honourable Rittenbach, you have no authority to act on behalf of Parliament or to speak on behalf of Parliament, and if you wanted this information, you should have approached the relevant structures of Parliament to request that.
Just read how I found it. In what capacity?
Kind regards, G. Rittenbach. You don't even say that you represent a political party.
On what letterhead is it?
Parliament letterhead.
Oh, that's an oversight on behalf of the secretary, then. It should have been on a democratic line.
It's oversight of the secretary. Yes. So, no, fine. We'll accept that. We'll accept that and just say that also the procedure in this committee is determined by the committee itself, subject to the constitution and the law, and that no individual member of this committee has the right to prescribe to this committee how it should do its work. Thank you.
Does that include yourself?
Exactly.
Good.
Except where I operate in my official capacity as the chairperson of this committee. Advocate Rittenbach.
Chairperson.
Yeah, Honourable Majake.
Does it then therefore mean that that letter is being officially withdrawn?
No consequence. Whether it's withdrawn or not, it is of no consequence.
Yes, Chair, I think these statements of yours needs interrogation. The fact of the matter is that as individual members of Parliament, we all have not only the duty, but also the right of oversight. This matter is in the public domain, and unfortunately, the history of this specific committee does not speak of an inclusive approach from your side. In fact, in the past, specifically when dealing with the NPA, you have been suppressing members of the opposition in engagement with the NPA. So as a matter of fact, whether you deem this letter to be withdrawn or not, we are not apologetic about this letter. It's within our rights as members of the Parliament, in terms of our duties of oversight, to engage with any institution that accounts to Parliament. We will not be made subservient members to the ANC in this committee or in Parliament. We will exercise our duties as we seem fit, and if you then feel that we've overstepped boundaries, you're welcome to complain to whatever body you deem fit, but as the matter stands now, we are unapologetic about our approach.
I will be the first person to confirm your right to engage as members of this committee, but not you, the right to speak on behalf of Parliament or to speak on behalf of this committee unless mandated by this committee or acting on the in federal...
Did the Honourable Breitenbach purport in the letter to act on behalf of the committee? No, she did not. She acted in her personal capacity as a member of Parliament, entitled to information. We have a right to information in this country, which we will not be allowed to be suppressed by you.
She has already conceded that her secretary made a mistake for writing a letter on behalf of Parliament, and she has no right to act on behalf of Parliament. Thank you very much. Chairperson, Honourable Matthias.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. Can we a little bit allow our tempers to go down? Can we, for a moment, allow our tempers to go down? And let me proceed to make this point. I welcome the brief history that you shared with us of the evolution of this very important organ of state. And the basis upon which it has been in place and the transformation it has undergone, that is very much appreciated. And furthermore, highlighting the recent developments concerning the very organ of state. And certainly welcome few of the points that you have raised in respect of what has happened over the last 3 weeks in relation to the matter concerning Honourable Breitenbach. And may I address you, Chair, and beg your indulgence on the legal opinion that you sought and for which such of legal advice has been sourced. In the last time when the National Director of Public Prosecution appeared before this committee, I was attending another portfolio committee on rural development and reform. I missed that opportunity. But I got that, this time around I've got an opportunity to sit with him face to face and tell him that his conduct to question the bona fide of an elected public representative in the person of Honorable Breitenbach was an act of lack of respect on his part. He is, unlike us as members of Parliament, appointed, and we are elected by the public. And for him to come and question the bona fide and the suitability of public representatives to sit in a meeting like this was an act of utter disrespect. And that should not repeat itself again, now or in the future. For as long as he accepts the position of being a non-partisan public representative. If Parliament had any concern regarding Member Breitenbach's suitability to be a member of this portfolio committee, that would have been raised the behest and without being coerced by a appointed civil servant. And he ought to be reprimanded for his disrespectful conduct and must never repeat such a mistake again in the future. That's the point I wanted to depart from.
Honorable members, let's distinguish between in-house matters of the committee and public matters. The people of South Africa today wants to hear Advocate Sean Abraham's accounting for the activities of his office regarding the charges against the minister and his colleagues and the withdrawal of those charges. So let's focus on those matters, and I want to, Honorable Swart.
No, not to labor issues further, I liked the word that you've just used, accounting, because I was slightly perturbed at the beginning when you indicated this would be an open briefing, and whilst it is a briefing, we're appreciative that Advocate Abrahams has already had a press briefing where he has indicated exactly what the reasoning was for his decision. This is a session of being accountable to Parliament. In terms of Section 35 of the NPA Act, we know the accountability of the NPA to Parliament. So whilst it does take the form of initially a briefing, it's obviously us holding the NPA accountable in terms of both the Constitution and the NPA Act for decisions that it has taken. Thank you, Chair.
Dr.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for recognizing me.
I've been seeing you for long, and you are most welcome.
Yes, no, Chairperson, I'm not a member of the committee, but in terms of the rules of Parliament, all members are welcome to attend, so thank you for recognizing me. I agree with you that we should get on with the business if possible. I just think there's an important principle involved in terms of what happened with the letter. I think we should just get clarity on that, if you don't mind. Okay, Honourable Breitenbach did not concede that the Secretary wrongfully wrote a letter on behalf of Parliament. Members of Parliament are entitled to use parliamentary letterheads in their capacity as members of Parliament. If there was a letterhead that indicated Parliament Justice Committee and that was used, that would be something different. But members of Parliament are entitled to use letterheads, and I don't think anything was wrong in that sense. Thank you
very much. Let me just say, Honourable Swart, that I didn't see briefing as exclusive of accounting, because we don't want the Advocate Abrahams to account on the basis of newspaper reports. We want him to account on the basis what he can say on record in full view of the people of South Africa. So I don't differ with you, but the two are interlinked. The floor is open to you. And let's just also agree that whether or not you agree with any statement he makes, there will be time for you to deal with that. So I'm not going to allow interruptions. I want the people of South Africa to hear for themselves so that they can also evaluate our contributions independently.
Chairperson, I'm sorry to intervene. There was a request in terms of procedure that you did not give a ruling on. There was a request that the presentation or the input by the director should be under oath. There was such a request just now, and I think you should just deal with that before we proceed.
We have not done that before, and we are not going to create a new rule now. I am going to allow Advocate Shona Abrahams to proceed.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson. Good morning, Honourable Members of the Committee, my colleagues from the National Prosecuting Authority, members of the media, ladies and gentlemen, the viewers at home, the listeners on radio. Chairperson, I would like to thank the Portfolio Committee for inviting the National Prosecuting Authority to specifically brief the committee on the withdrawal of the charges against Minister of Finance, Thabiso Gordhan. Allow me the opportunity to first introduce my team. On my right is Dr. Silas Ramahiti, SC, who is the Deputy National Director of Public Prosecutions. Directly behind me is Advocate Toko Machukwene, who is an Acting Deputy National Director of Public Prosecutions, and she heads the National Prosecuting Services. Behind Dr. Ramahiti is my spokesperson, Advocate Levuyo Mfako. Chairperson, would that suffice? Thank you. Chairperson, we are honored to appear before this committee. We were honored to appear here a few weeks ago on the 12th of October 2016 when we presented the NPA's annual report in terms of the provision of Section 35, Subsection 2A, read with Section 22, Subsection 4G of the National Prosecuting Authority Act. We accept that today's invitation is in terms of the provision of Section 35, Subsection 1 of the NPA Act, which provides that the prosecuting authority shall be accountable to Parliament in respect of its powers, functions and duties under the NPA Act, including decisions regarding the institution of prosecution. When we previously appeared before this committee, we briefed the committee on the decision of the Acting Special Director of Public Prosecutions and the head of the Priority Crimes Litigation Unit taken in consultation with the Director of Public Prosecutions of North Gauteng to prosecute Mr. Opa Mahashula, Mr. Ivan Pillay, and Minister Praveen Godan on inter alia fraud-related charges. Chairperson, I'd like to briefly just deal with the initial charges or the decision in respect of to prosecute the persons in question. I was briefed by the Acting Special Director together with the Director of Public Prosecutions of North Gauteng in respect of the decision to prosecute, which decision was taken in consultation in terms of Section 24, Subsection 3 of the NPA Act. I was satisfied on the merits that a case had been made out on paper as per the briefing. I was further briefed on public interest consideration as a direct result of the profile of the individuals concerned, along with the fragile state of our economy, and that such a decision would appear on the face of it political as a direct result of the political climate we currently find ourselves in and had been in a few weeks ago. In this regard, Section 22, Subsection 4F requires the National Director to bring the United Nations guidelines on the role of prosecutors to the attention of the Directors of Public Prosecution, Special Directors and Prosecutors, and to promote their respect for and compliance with the principles contained therein within the framework of our own national domestic legislation. Chairperson, these guidelines make reference to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which enshrines the principles of equality before the law, the presumption of innocence, and the right to a fair and public hearing by an independent and impartial tribunal. This is further enshrined in Section 9, Subsection 1 of our Constitution, which provides that everyone is equal before the law and has the right to equal protection and equal benefit of the law. The UN guidelines on the role of prosecutors require prosecutors to carry out their functions impartially and avoid all political, social, religious, racial, cultural, or any other kind of discrimination. The impact of this decision, not just on the parties concerned, but also the broader public interest in the matter, was certainly given serious consideration. The officials concerned advised that this was by no means an easy decision to be made, and due regard had to be given to the effect of the decision. As with all matters where public interest considerations are applicable, a careful balancing of all considerations were made. I am mindful, as are all prosecutors in the country, that consideration of public interest and public sentiment around our decisions must be carefully considered, but similarly that these factors cannot dictate whether we prosecute or not. We must abide by the rule of law and ensure that our decisions are sound and legally sustainable. Chairperson, we are in fact enjoined by the international standards that we as a prosecuting authority and country subscribe to, such as in the Convention Against Foreign Bribery, to ensure that our independence is reinforced in the considerations of economic and political considerations, as well as the stature of either private or legal entities to not influence the decisions we make. Being mindful of all this and the institution's constitutional imperatives and the duty to act without fear, without favour, or without prejudice, I was satisfied with the briefing that there was a prima facie case based on the evidence in the matter, and that to decide not to proceed because of the impact of the decision would erode the rule of law and the institution's duty to act without fear, without favour or prejudice. Chairperson, in terms of section 179, subsection 6 of the Constitution, the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services must exercise final responsibility over the National Prosecuting Authority. This is further confirmed by section 33, subsection 1 of the NPA Act, which obligates the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services to exercise such final responsibility over this all-important institution. In recognition thereof, and in compliance with the provisions of section 33, subsection 2 of the NPA Act, I subsequently briefed the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services of the decision taken by the Special Director in consultation with the Director of Public Prosecutions on or about 4 October 2016. I did not seek the Minister's permission for the prosecutors to proceed with the matter. At the conclusion of the briefing, I requested the Minister to brief the President. I had done so because this matter had a large public interest. I further did so because this matter related to a sitting cabinet minister. I have done this in previous occasions. A typical example is when the ambassador, or the former ambassador or high commissioner to Australia, Mr. Spuwelabele, was facing charges of inter alia corruption. Similarly in that matter, and it's not unusual to do so, I briefed the Minister of Justice and requested the Minister to brief the President. So this certainly was not an unusual situation. Chairperson, I believe the Minister briefed the President during the latter part of that week or the weekend. Allegations have been levelled that I discussed this matter with the President at a meeting held during the afternoon on Monday, 10 October 2016 at Lutuli House. Chairperson, that is completely incorrect. The minister had briefed the President long before this meeting. During the afternoon of 10 October 2016, I received a call from the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services, who invited me to attend an urgent meeting around the violence that had erupted as a direct result of the Fees Must Fall campaign at institutions of higher learning. I recall buses were burning, streets were barricaded, shops were being looted, buildings and vehicles were being vandalized, people were being assaulted. It was almost a complete state of anarchy. According to the Minister, the President had called for an urgent meeting with the ministers of the security cluster. My understanding was that the President was leaving the country later that day during the early evening, and the meeting could not be rescheduled. The President did not invite me to this meeting. The President was not even aware that I would be in attendance at this meeting until I arrived at the meeting. The Minister of State Security was deputising as the Minister of Police. He was present in this meeting. The Minister of Social Development was deputising for the Minister of Defence and Military Veterans. She was present in this meeting. The Minister of Justice was present in this meeting, and he was of the view that I could contribute much more than he could at this meeting, and requested my attendance. Chairperson, I can still recall having to first cancel a dentist appointment that very afternoon at extremely short notice before confirming my availability to attend this meeting. The issue of the charges against Minister Praveen Godad was not discussed at this meeting at all. The only issue that was discussed was the issue around the violence that had erupted at the institutions of higher learning as a direct result of the Fees Must Fall campaign. Chairperson, I would verily like to believe that my attendance at the meeting did not compromise my independence nor my integrity. Instead, my attendance at the meeting should be viewed in the prevailing circumstances of the day and that it was necessary. The National Director should be able to meet with anyone regarding any issues associated with his responsibilities or related to state security and still be able to act independently, objectively and impartially and without fear, without favour and without prejudice. Chairperson, I'd like to briefly speak about the media briefing of 11 October 2016 when I announced the decision that Minister Godad would be prosecuted. The speculation around the investigation in the rogue unit, the arrest and prosecution of Minister Godad had been well publicised since 2015, occasionally escalating in momentum. Especially the alleged political motives for such an investigation, arrest, and prosecution. We called a media briefing to take the country into our confidence, to dispel any notion of political and or any other perceived interference. As head of the institution, Chairperson, I deemed it appropriate for me to announce that decision. Chairperson, it is now common cause that I review the decision in terms of Section 179, subsection 5D of the Constitution, which decision I announced on 31 October 2016. I want to return to 11 October 2016. On that day, when I announced the decision of the Acting Special Director of Public Prosecutions and the head of the Priority Crimes Negation Unit, made in consultation with the Director of Public Prosecutions, North Gauteng, that Mr. Pillay, Mr. Mahashula, and Minister Godad must be prosecuted and arraigned on various charges, I alluded to the provisions of Section 179, Subsection 5D of the Constitution, which empowers me as the National Director to review a decision to prosecute or not to prosecute. After having consulted the relevant director, and after having taken representations within a period as specified by me from the accused persons, the complainant, and any other person or party whom I consider relevant. When I made the announcement, I did extend an invitation to Mr. Mahashula, Mr. Pillay, and Mr. Godad to make representations to me as the National Director. This is clearly in line with the provisions of Section 179, Subsection 5D of the Constitution, read with Section 22, Subsection 2C of the National Prosecuting Authority Act, to review a decision to prosecute and to decide whether to continue or discontinue a prosecution. Chairperson, the receipt of representations and requests to review decisions is very much a daily occurrence. The NPA receives representations from accused persons and or their legal representatives in respect of matters both in the lower courts and in the high courts, which are submitted either directly to prosecutors, control prosecutors, senior public prosecutors, chief prosecutors, the officers of the directors of public prosecutions, the offices of special directors of public prosecution. This serves as checks and balances in the criminal justice system. And so too does my constitution enshrine powers to review. Chairperson, since my appointment in June 2015, I have reviewed numerous cases. I have overruled the original decisions of directors of public prosecutions and or special directors to prosecute or to discontinue prosecutions in approximately 16 matters. I have also agreed with the original decisions of directors of public prosecutions and or special directors in approximately 94 matters. Typical examples of such cases include members of parliament, such as Tony Ngeni's driving under the influence charges, in which I agreed that the prosecution must continue after being requested to review the matter. Similarly, in the matter of Faiz Jacobs here in the Western Cape, I also agreed with the original decision of the Director of Public Prosecutions that the prosecution must continue. However, in the matter of Pandey and Madu down in KwaZulu-Natal, I disagreed with the decision of the Director of Public Prosecution, and I have subsequently directed that Mr. Pandey and Colonel Madu be prosecuted. I verily believe that that is a general public misconception as to what my role really is as a National Director, and there's no full appreciation of the structure of the National Prosecuting Authority. Whilst I have the power to institute a prosecution, I would only do so in very rare instances. This matter was certainly not one of those very rare instances. Thus, Chairperson, if I made a decision to prosecute, I would not be competent to review my own decision in terms of both the Constitution or the NPA Act. I am vested with and retain the power to review a decision to prosecute after complying with the provisions of the Constitution and the NPA Act, as I've already alluded to. Hence my invitation to make representations if the accused in that matter, as they were at the time, had wished to do so. Chairperson, Section 179, subsection 5C of the Constitution, as replicated in Section 22, subsection 2B of the National Prosecuting Authority Act, empowers the National Director to only intervene in the prosecution process when policy directives are not complied with. In respect of this particular matter, there were no policy directives that, or the policy directives were complied with. It was not a situation of policy directives not having been complied with, or at the very least, that none was brought to my attention. I have always been mindful, and I remain mindful, of the constitutionally entrenched rights that everyone is equal before the law and everyone has the right to equal protection and equal benefit of the law. Chairperson, on Friday, 14 October 2016, Freedom Under Law and the Helen Suzman Foundation, through their lawyers, submitted a communication to me in which they requested me to withdraw the charges against Minister Godan unconditionally on or before a specified date, failing which they would exercise their right to seek urgent recourse to review and set aside the decision to prosecute Minister Godan. The following Monday, 17 October, and the Tuesday, 18 October, both Mr. Mahashula and Mr. Pillay requested me to review the decision to prosecute them by way of representation to me in terms of the provisions of Section 179, subsection 5D of the Constitution through their legal representatives. I can assure the public, and I can assure this committee, Chairperson, that Mr. Pillay and Mr. Mahashula were accorded a very fair and a very dignified hearing whilst making their representation. They did so both verbally and in writing. This much has been confirmed by their respective legal teams that represented them during the submission of the representation. I obtained the views of the prosecuting team and the acting special director prior to reviewing the matter. I also extended an invitation to the Commissioner of SARS, being the complainant in the matter, and to the head of the Hawks as the investigating authority to submit representations to me. Both parties elected not to make any further submissions. As a result of the representations and submissions received, I directed further investigations into the matter. The outcome of these investigations ultimately informed my decision. The Hawks, however, did write to me at the 11th hour during the late afternoon of 30 October 2016 to request me not to withdraw the charges. The head of the Hawks had learned through the media that I may overrule the decision to prosecute. The further correspondence from the Hawks did in any event not take the matter any further. Nevertheless, Chairperson, the horse had bolted at the time, as I had made my final decision earlier that afternoon prior to receiving the further communication from the Hawks. The horse. Chairperson, after due consideration of the matter, I decided to overrule the decision to prosecute Mr. Mahashula, Mr. Pillay, and Minister Praveen Godan on the charges listed in the summonses and directed that the summonses be withdrawn with immediate effect. As a result of this, there was thus no longer any need for the aforementioned persons to appear in court in respect of the charges that had previously been preferred against them. Again, after reviewing the matter and before announcing it, I briefed the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services in giving effect to the provisions of Section 33 of the NPA Act and Section 179, Subsection 6 of the Constitution. I once again further requested the Minister to inform the President of my review decision. I once again did so on the same grounds as previously stated. Chairperson, on 1 November 2016, I received a letter from the Chairperson of the General Counsel of the Bar, Ngalwana SC, to which he attached a letter of complaint against me from the Secretary General of the Economic Freedom Fighters, the EFF, which letter requests the GCB to disbar me. The EFF raised five allegations against me in their letter to the GCB. They firstly allege an improper meeting at the headquarters of the ruling political party in reference to the meeting at the Thule House on 10 October 2016. Secondly, they allege the use of an act which is inconsistent with the Constitution. This is with specific reference the charges preferred against their leader for allegedly contravening the Rights of Assemblies Act 17 of 1956. Thirdly, Chairperson, they allege interference with administrative powers vested in accounting officers and executive authorities. And this is with specific reference to the charges preferred against Minister Godan. Fourthly, the EFF allege an improper meeting with an accused person. And this is in reference to the meeting at the Thule House with President Zuma and ministers of the security cluster on 10 October 2016. Lastly, Chairperson, the EFF alleged discussions with ministers in matters where the NPA will probably have to make a decision as being inappropriate, again in reference to the meeting at the Thule House in respect to the violence associated with the Fees Must Fall campaign. The EFF concluded their letter by informing the GCB that it reserves its right to pursue the matter to the courts should the GCB not act against me. Chairperson, I am aware of a further complaint. It's a complaint, it's a well-publicized complaint by Mr. Matthews Poza, a lawyer, a politician, and the former Treasurer General of the African National Congress. Mr. Poza has purportedly laid a complaint against me at the GCB. I am, however, yet to hear from the GCB in respect of this particular complaint. I have learned of this complaint through the media. Chairperson, On the very same day of 1 November 2016, Freedom Under Law and the Helen Sussman Foundation, once again through their lawyers, wrote President Zuma requesting the President to provisionally suspend Dr. Pretorius SC, Advocate Nzanyati, and I by 7 November 2016. This is this coming Monday. Pending inquiries into our fitness to hold office in terms of Section 12, Subsection 6A of the National Prosecuting Authority Act, failure which they endeavour to exercise their rights on an urgent basis. Freedom Under Law and the Helen Sussman Foundation have further invited Dr. Pretorius and I to resign from our positions without any further delay. They direct no such request in respect of Advocate Nzanyati. Chairperson, the above matters and potential pending litigation somewhat limits our ability to engage more fully with the committee on these matters. We once again thank you for the opportunity for inviting us to present on this matter today. We will continue to exercise our functions without fear, favour or prejudice, irrespective of the station in life of any person and or entity. We will continue to consider the interests of the community, but will not give heed to the wishes of the community. We will continue to uphold the independence and impartiality of the prosecuting authority and prosecutors generally, which is legally and constitutionally entrenched. In this regard, the NPA Act inter alia provides that a member of the prosecuting authority shall serve impartially and exercise, carry out, or perform his or her powers, duties and functions in good faith and without fear, favour or prejudice, and subject only to the Constitution and the law. I would do well, Chairperson, to close off and briefly touch on the decision of the High Court in Pretoria in the matter of State v. Yengeni, 2006, Volume 1, SACR 405T, at paragraph 51 and 52, with specific reference to the impartiality and esteem of the Office of the Prosecutor. The Constitution guarantees the professional independence of the National Director of Public Prosecutions and every professional member of his staff, with the obvious aim of ensuring their freedom from any interference in their function by the powerful, the well-connected, the rich, and the peddlers of political influence. The untrammeled exercise of their powers in a spirit of professional independence is vital to the functioning of the legal system. The independence of the judiciary is directly related to and depends upon the independence of the legal professionals and of the National Director of Public Prosecutions. Undermining this freedom from outside influence would lead to the entire legal process, including the functioning of the judiciary, being held hostage to those interests that might be threatened by a fearless, committed, and independent search for the truth. Chairperson, I have not been captured by anyone, nor has the National Prosecuting Authority been captured by anyone. I thank you.
Thank you, Advocate Rahams and honourable members. You have heard for yourself, and the floor is open. let me first take the names. Honourable Breitenbach, Honourable Horn, Honourable Schwartz, Honourable Ngabe. I've lost one or two teeth, so I can't pronounce. Honourable Dr. Melda. Honourable Matthias, Honourable Mutapo, Honourable Bongo, Honourable Majake. In that order, let's hear Honourable Breitenbach.
Thank you. Mr. Abels, I see on the delegation list that you had
Advocate Pretorius and Advocate Ms. Nyati on your list. Where are they? If you could answer that now, please.
They're not here.
I can see that. Why not?
We don't think it's necessary for them to be here. I have two of my deputy nationals that are present. I have my spokesperson that is present.
As far as I'm aware, the Dr. Amaiche and Advocate Majakweni were not directly involved in this matter. Is that correct?
Ms. Breitenbach, I was invited by the Portfolio Committee to address the committee on a specific issue. I've requested two of my deputy nationals to accompany me to this briefing. I initially thought of coming alone, but I decided to request two of my deputy nationals to accompany me. The prerogative as to who I would like to accompany me to such a briefing resides with me.
Are you finished? Are you done? Is that your answer? Can you tell me then how their names got on the list?
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm just rising on a point of order. I think it is not order that Honorable Breitenbach will get into a dialogue way of asking questions to the advocate. I'm actually suggesting that if there are a set of questions, you must put the questions and they be answered. But we're not in a court of law where we would have to pose the question in a manner that she's posing these questions.
Also, with respect, Honorable Breitenbach, should we use this forum to discuss the right to constitute a delegation, which is something that we invited the office to appear before us, led by the national director, and who he brings with. It's not the details that Parliament should be interested in, but there are key questions that he has to answer. So we are interested in the answers to these key questions, not in who he brought, who he didn't bring. Thank you.
I would like to know, from whomsoever compiled the list of delegates, how their names got onto that list and they're not here. It's a simple question, and it's an answer that I would like.
By the minister, the minister's office.
The minister's office. So the minister thought they should be here.
Chairperson? I think what Honorable Bongo is actually saying is that let's actually adopt the usual manner in which the questions are asked in the portfolio committee. We ask questions, all of us, and then we then allow the presenter to respond to those questions so that it doesn't appear like we are having a tribunal.
Can we put questions and not prescribe how the office should have compiled the report, because that is the names, because that is water under the bridge. It's not taking us forward. Here we want answers to the pertinent questions.
Yes, Chair, I just want to address you on the issue raised by the honourable members of the ANC that we should have this as a stale question and answer session. As a matter of fact, there's good precedent within this committee for follow-up questions. And I think as this is, as you have pointed out, a matter of grave importance to the public, and with due respect to the national director, he has the habit of giving long-winded answers to questions, sometimes with the effect that he evades answering the question. And I think from the outset, we as a committee must decide that in such instances, the member asking the question should have the right in the ordinary course to probe the National Director with a follow-up question at least. Thank you.
Follow-ups are allowed, but not question and answer section. That's what the objection is all about. Honourable Swart?
Yeah, I think it's a serious deficiency and something we need to look at as committees, the way that we engage, because it's very difficult for the National Director to take 30, 40 questions, or even 50 questions, and then to go through each one. We should, and it's been my experience in previous terms of Parliament where we engage and each member gets 5 or 10 minutes to engage with the person appearing before them and asking questions and align those questions to be answered instead of having so many questions thrown at a person appearing before us. And then, so Chair, is it not possible that we are able to engage as we, with a number of questions, getting the answers to those, and then we move on to the next person in the list to ask questions, so that we are also enabling the question to be remembered correctly, because that is a problem that many people appearing before us have. Would you consider that, Chair?
That's no problem, Honourable Sharp. What we're saying is that we must not go back and say this is how the list should have been compiled, because it is compiled as it is before us, and we can use public time to discuss public compilation of lists. But otherwise, your suggestion is acceptable. Honourable Breitenbach, can we then stick to the rules and put the question?
I'd love it, the Chair, if you would stick to the rules. Well, Mr. Admiral, then I'd like to know from you, when you do get around to answering, why you thought that Dr. Ramahiti and Advocate Majakwene could be more helpful than Advocate Pretorius and Advocate Mzinyati. I'm told that the attorneys of Minister Gordhan, in fact, prior to the announcement of the charges, made representations to Mr. Pretorius. Were you aware of this? Is it so? I'm told that they got no reply to that request, and 2 days later is your now infamous press conference, the charges were announced. So in conjunction with that question, I'd like to know why it was so important to announce those charges at the precise time that you did. I would also like to know if Mr. Mzinyati in fact did concur with Mr. Pretorius regarding the institution of this particular prosecution. And if he did, was it in writing? And if it is in writing, are you prepared to produce that document? And while we're on the topic of concurring, because it revolves around the same section, did Mr. Mzinyati concur with the prosecution of Mr. McBride, one that was so ignominiously withdrawn a couple of days ago because no witnesses arrived at court? And similarly, did Mr. Chauke agree to the prosecution of Sabia, where there was no possibility of a successful prosecution? I'd also like to know if you have ever personally met with any members of the South African Police Force, or the Hawks in particular, and more particularly the investigating team in this particular matter against Minister Gordhan, Mr. Pillay and Mr. Mashula, regarding this prosecution, and if you have, when and how often? stated publicly that you did not apply your mind to this particular matter and that you had seen no documents with regard to it and you did not seek to do so. For this, I'm relying on press reports, so if I'm wrong, please feel free to tell me. You told this committee at your last appearance that you raised the issue of public interest with the prosecution team and you applied your mind. Is it so that you applied your mind to the issue of public interest or did you apply your mind to the facts? If you did not apply your mind to the facts, I would like to know why. At your press conference, the first one, where you announced the charges, you said that you had decided inter alia that the Minister of Finance must be charged with fraud and a theft. If that came across as an incorrect emphasis, then please point that out to me. And if it is correct that you decided this, then would you explain why you thought that there was a case? If it's not correct, then why did you say it if you had not had any personal knowledge of the correctness of the facts? And how is it that the National Director of Public Prosecutions could make this a type of announcement in the full glare of the publicity that it engendered and that you knew it would engender, that was your intention quite clearly, without ascertaining the correctness of the facts? And why is it that you only chose to review the matter after representations were made, when in a matter of this type of importance, one would have expected you to review the matter quite thoroughly before you made such a spectacular announcement? And when you answer that question, please bear in mind that the other members of the committee may not be quite so familiar with the manner in which the NPA functions. I, however, am not at that disadvantage. I would also like to know from you why you said in your press conference that you owe no one an apology. Do you have any grasp of the consequences of your actions? Do you understand that 50 billion rand was knocked out of our economy as a result of this blunder? Do you have any conception of the kind of stress, discomfort, and personal agonizing that you put Mr. Pillay, Mr. Mafashula, and Mr. Gordon through? And how is it possible that you don't think you owe anyone an apology? As a matter of common decency. I have many more questions, Mr. Chair, but I'll give other people a chance, and if we get a second round, I'll come back to them. Thank you.
Members of this committee know how state institutions function, including the NPA. So I'm not going to allow you to teach the members on how the NPA operates. Just answer the question. Honourable Swart suggested that we must get answers immediately after the speaker to ensure that some questions are not lost. I'm going to accept his proposal.
Before I start responding to these specific questions, I just want to raise an issue. Maybe we can see clarity on it. Before I respond to these questions, Chairperson, I just want to see clarity. It is quite clear that there will be potential litigation against me and members of the NPA in respect of this matter, particularly by the General Counsel of the Bar as a result of a complaint laid by the Economic Freedom Front. Secondly, as a result...
Honourable Chair, on a point of order. There's nothing called Economic Freedom Front. Can the advocate be corrected? Yes.
What is the view?
Honourable Matthias,
you ought to be corrected.
Freedom of speech lies at the heart of our democracy. And if we are going to limit the freedom of officials who we have invited to come and speak and prescribe what they say, not say, I think we are going to have problems. Honourable
Chairperson, maybe you misunderstood. There are two parties here. One is called the Freedom Front. The one is called Economic Freedom Fighters. Now, we are also for economic freedom, but there are no such thing as Economic Freedom Front. It's just a mistake in terms of the name. There's no complaint by such an entity.
The name. Okay. No, I think that's noted and observed.
So you retract your reprimand.
Yeah, you see, if you don't speak close to the mic, you disadvantage me. So now I see what you are saying. I accept it.
Thank you, Chairperson. It certainly was a slip of the tongue, and I certainly did not mean to offend any of the honourable members present or the parties. Thank you so much. It was certainly a slip of the tongue, and I had no intention to offend any of the honourable members nor the associated political parties. Chairperson, to get back where I was, I'd like to just raise a brief concern. It is clear from the complaint laid with the General Counsel of the Bar, as well as the letter written by Freedom Under Law and the Helen Suzman Foundation to the President, that there will be litigation against myself and members of the institution, or potential litigation against myself and members of the NPA in respect of this particular matter. Now, I'm concerned insofar as my rights are concerned, insofar as responding to all these questions, and so to the rights of the individuals concerned, that is particularly Mr. Mzinyati and Mr. Pretorius.
Advocate, you are also a lawyer. Answer the questions to the best of your ability with due regard to the implications that this may have in case there's litigation. So that's a...
Thank you so much.
Your Honor, Chair, I think we need to give a more concise, clear, direct advice to the NDPP. The fact is that there is no way, and even though he did not name it, that he can rely in some way on the so-called sub judice rule. I think as a matter of course, we need to remind the NDPP of the old adage which says, the truth will set you free. So for now, nothing is off limits. There is no court case. And as long as the NDPP takes the committee into his confidence truthfully, there should be no adverse consequences in the case of any litigation.
Why, I said, as a lawyer, you should know that. But we can't sit in this committee and start making new rules on the approach. We cannot do that. Proceed.
Chair, the rules of parliament do assist us where one is faced with a situation, and that is what was alluded to earlier, where one can be sworn in as a witness, and then you have full indemnity in terms of Rule 168. You have full indemnity from any, what you would give before this House may not be used in any court or place outside of Parliament. We appreciate that Advocate Abrams is not here as a witness, so that is obviously, but there is. That is the provision that is normally used where a person is concerned about what they might say in a committee that might be used at a later stage. So I think, Chair, that is
Let's not make this meeting an academic meeting. We agree that there's room to follow up. If a question has not been fully answered, the member will have the right to follow up. So this is not a rules committee. It's a debating
No, Chair, I'm sorry. I think you're misunderstanding. The concern of the advocate is that he might be incriminating himself or an issue that might come up in a civil matter at a later stage. And one has an appreciation of that, and that is why that specific rule was drafted. But let's allow...
I understood that very well. That's why I said when he answers, it was with due regard to the implications of his answers. Proceed.
Thank you. I certainly didn't want to object to answering. I'd like to answer and take this committee into my confidence. I just wanted to see clarity around the issue as I've done on previous occasions. Thank you, Chairperson. With regard to the first question from Ms. Breitenbach, with regards to why did I feel that Dr. Pretorius and Advocate Mzinyati not be present, I, of course, engaged with them, and I didn't think it was necessary for them to be here for purposes of this exercise. Thank you. I, of course, didn't think it was necessary for them to be here for purposes of this exercise. The question around why I deemed it necessary to look at the matter after representations were made and before the initial decision was made. The prerogative of deciding on a matter to prosecute that is with the Priority Crime Litigation Unit lies with that office, and that decision needs to be made in consultation with the Director of Public Prosecution in terms of Section 24, Subsection 3 of the NPA Act. Now, once that decision had been made, as is prescribed in terms of the NPA Act, my powers come into play on two fronts. Firstly, the power of review, which I outlined earlier on during my briefing. And secondly, where policy directives had not been adhered to. Now, when I made my briefing earlier on, I said that nothing had been brought to my attention that policy directors had not been adhered to, so there's no need for me to intervene in the matter. And secondly, it's only proper that I can only intervene in a matter when I review it. I also spoke frankly about me having inherent powers to prosecute, original powers to prosecute, which I will only use when it's really necessary. And I didn't deem it necessary to utilize those powers in respect of this matter. I have every confidence in the special directors and directors of public prosecution, who too have original powers to decide to prosecute or not. On the question, why was it necessary to announce the charges at the time that I did? The investigation in that matter had been concluded. The summons had been issued. And I deem it necessary to announce the charges because it's an important matter. And of course, before it leaks out that a decision had been made by the special director in consultation with the Director of Public Prosecutions that Minister Goddard, Mr. Mahashul, and Mr. Pillay must be prosecuted. On the question, why did Mr. Nzinyati, well, whether Mr. Nzinyati concurred. He did concur. Did he do so in writing? And am I prepared to produce the document? I am prepared to produce any document in any court or legal forum if I need to produce a document. I'm not certain whether it was in writing, but I'm not certain whether it was in writing.
Suffices that you are prepared to produce documents when requested. But today we cannot debate that. We just have to answer.
Before the appropriate legal forum, that is my response. I'm prepared to produce documentation before the appropriate legal forum. Thank you.
Just on this point, sorry, Chairperson, but in terms of the rules of Parliament, Parliament can also request such documents. Would the Director also give this to Parliament if Parliament requests this? Because the rules make provision for that.
We agree with you. But the Director was not forewarned that in this meeting he will be requested to produce the documents.
I understand that, Chairperson, I agree. But if Parliament would request that, would you be prepared to give those documents to Parliament as well?
I agree.
Thank you. Let me respond to that question, Chairperson. If Parliament requests any documents from me, I'll consider the written request from Parliament.
Close the matter.
Thank you.
I agree with the Honourable Member. Proceed.
Did Advocate Nzinyati concur in respect of the McBride decision? Yes, he did. Did Advocate Chauke agree with the Sabia decision? The decision in the Sabia matter emanates from Advocate Chauke's area of jurisdiction, so it comes from his office. So it's not a matter of whether he agreed or not, it's a matter that resonated in his office, and his office made the decision to prosecute. Did I meet with the investigating team? I did not meet with the investigating team. I don't meet with investigating officers. On the question of me having said publicly that I applied my mind the question wasn't quite clear whether I applied my mind to the facts or public interest. When the briefing was made to me, I was briefed on the facts. So too was I briefed on public interest. I was satisfied on the facts, on the merits of the matter, that there was a case. Similarly, the issue of public interest was interrogated, and I've addressed that quite comprehensively in my presentation earlier on in respect of public interest. There was a question from Ms. Breitenbach in respect of me announcing the decision. I announced the decision, but I did not take the decision to prosecute. But I did announce the decision. As head of the institution, I felt it necessary for me to announce the decision. This matter was well publicized. There was lots of public interest in respect of the matter. And that's why I announced it. Not because I announced it does that mean that I own the decision. I specifically said that this decision was made by the Acting Special Director of Public Prosecution and Head of the PCLU in consultation with the Director of Public Prosecutions in Pretoria. It's made in terms of Section 24, Subsection 3 of the NPA Act. question, why was it necessary to review the matter after receiving representation? Can you, with your leave, Chairperson, may I ask Ms. Breitenbach just to clarify that question?
Sorry, there appears to be a misunderstanding. The question was, why did you only review the matter after receiving representation? In a matter of this kind of importance, not this magnitude, the kind of consequences that we all knew it would have, why did you not feel it was necessary to interrogate the facts a whole lot more carefully before you made the announcement? Why did you allow that time lapse to happen that caused so much damage?
Thank you so much. I was satisfied with the facts when I was initially briefed in respect of the matter. And I had every confidence, and I still have every confidence, in my deputy directors and special directors insofar as the execution of the responsibilities are concerned. That was the evidence that had been presented to them at the time. I didn't deem it necessary to interfere in the prosecution process at the time. The issue of the representation, why I decided to only review the matter then, the decision had been made a few days. Allow me to finish. The decision was announced on the 11th. On the 14th, I received representation, or more a letter from Freedom Under Law and the Helen Suzman Foundation requesting me to withdraw the charges against Minister Godin. The Monday and Tuesday, on Monday, exactly a week later, I received representation from Mr. Pillay and Mr. Mahashula, legal representative. As a result of these representations, I immediately directed further investigation into the matter. And once I was satisfied that the issues that had been raised in the representation and the submission made I then made a decision in respect of the matter, which decision I announced on the 31st. The question of apology. When we make decisions to prosecute, we are really mindful that decisions to prosecute affect people's lives, affect people's careers, affect their reputations, and has major repercussions, not only for the people concerned, we certainly don't make decisions to prosecute for people to be affected adversely. So there certainly was no intention remotely to act detrimental or to negate the rights of any of the persons concerned here. There was no mala fide remotely in the making of this decision, in the announcing of this decision. Satisfied on the initial briefing made to me when a decision had been made to prosecute, I was satisfied that it was the case. I certainly had no intention, nor did the institution have the intention, nor did Mr. Pretorius and Zanyati have the intention to cause any distress to Mr. Godin, Mr. Pillay and Mr. Mahashula. That being said, any person that is facing charges would face some form of distress. I think I've answered all your questions.
What I'm going to do is not to allow follow-ups until all other members have spoken. I will not. Have you answered all the questions? Can we now ask Honorable Horn? Honorable Horn.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Abrams, I want to go back to your statement here today, and I think that's on the one hand your stance, that you announced the decision but you did not take the decision to prosecute. And then taking into consideration also your stance that you didn't deem it necessary for Messrs. Pretorius and Ms. Nyati to appear here. Also, your decision to make the announcement without being accompanied by Advocate Pretorius on the 11th. And then I want to state that there is no other conclusion to be drawn from all of this than that you ultimately deem this to be your decision. And then I want to take you back to a press conference you had when you announced the NPA's decision to appeal the so-called spy tapes ruling of the North Gauteng High Court, where you, although it was not the topic of the press conference, was at that stage asked by journalists about the progress in the so-called SARS Road Unit. And at that specific press conference, you indicated in your answers that due to the high profile of this investigation, you intended, as you are entitled to, as you have pointed out in terms of Section 22.9 of the NPA Act, to personally take charge of this matter and the prosecution. So that was your stance earlier in the year. Now you tell us that you in fact had no prior involvement in the decision making. But this all seems at odds with each other. So when did you divorce yourself from the decision taking in this matter, if at all? And do you still stay with your version of event that you were not involved with the decision making at all? Then, Chair, the second question I have is in respect of the whole issue of the charges being politically motivated. On the day after the 11th, the 12th of October, there was again interactions by Mr. Abrams with journalists. In fact, during the press briefing, in answer to questions, he, I think in no uncertain terms, said that the days of people disrespecting the decisions of the NPA is over. And then the next day, he, in answer to whether the decision prosecute was politically motivated, indicated that in his view, the claim that it is politically motivated is in itself political mischief. And then he indicated that the charge that this is politically motivated, well, there is nothing further from the truth, but, he added, ultimately, to use the idiom, the proof will be in the pudding. We must just all wait and see and wait for the outcome of the trial. So now we sit with a situation that, for whatever reason, these charges have been withdrawn. So the question following from all of this is, must we then not now conclude that there was indeed a political agenda, specifically given the fact that, and I will get to that in another question, there as a matter of fact never was a winnable case, and the NPA should have known it if they did not. And furthermore, we get now to the issue of respect for the NPA and ultimately the national director. Why must South Africa now not disrespect the decisions of the NPA? And does the national director understand that through all of this and his statements, he as a matter of fact brought the institution into disrepute? Then, Chair, coming to the issue of the independence and the visit to the Thule House, I want to make the statement, and the national director can comment, that in fact, his protestations that he must be able to meet with anyone at any place and still be able to perform his duties objectively and independently is wrong on a variety of levels. First of all, independence, even if guaranteed by the Constitution, is not assured in the eye, in the perception of the public. And trust and confidence, which is vital elements also of the independence of an institution like the NPA, cannot be but eroded if the national director choose to visit the home of any political party. Let's forget it was the ANC. And if he maintains that this visit was not problematic for this very reason, my statement to which I would like an answer is that indeed then he does not have the sound judgment which forms part of being fit and proper to hold this office. The next question I have, Chair, is in respect of the issue of applying his mind to the public interest before announcing the decision to prefer these charges on the 11th of October. And once again, I want to state that, in fact, due consideration of the public interest would have enjoined Mr. Abrams with a duty to, on his own initiative, review this matter properly before going public with it. So it's all well and fine to say we gave due consideration to the public interest in this matter. But objectively speaking, it was not done. Specifically knowing now that he later ascertained that in fact there was no winnable case. Because we must remember, he did not come back and say, there's still a prima facie case, but due to the consideration of public interest or the impact on the economy, due to the fact that it, in all probability, still according to him, will be a much lesser charge than those to follow, I will not pursue this. No, that was not the case. Ultimately, he, at his second press conference, admitted that there was never a winnable case. Then, Chairperson, I want to also address the issue of the process of review. And I want to have comment on the statement made by Freedom Under Law that, as a matter of fact, Mr. Abrams also made himself guilty of misconduct after their letter of the 14th of October. In that, he did not at that stage review the matter with the information available to him. He, as a matter of fact, ordered additional investigations. He issued a subpoena to the Government Pensions Administration's agency. And I want to hear from him whether he really feels that this was a proper course of action. To me, it would seem that he realized that he was the NPA, was in trouble in respect of these charges, but he still wanted to find a way to press ahead. And whether that thing can be deemed performing his functions in an impartial manner. And then lastly, Chair, the NDPP keeps on telling us that he has the fullest of confidence in those who he claimed made the decision. But the fact is, what is out in the open now is that the information which ultimately convinced him that there was never a winnable case was always available. It was not, it did not take something akin to the moon landing to finally ascertain that there was no winnable case. We had the shameful events where Mr. Flock Symington allegedly has even been held hostage to get by the Hawks to get their hands on vital documents in this regard, but most probably to conceal it. So the question then begs, if this information was always available, and he ultimately took ownership of this decision, why should we not conclude that he, in fact, was either acting with a politically motivated agenda, or that he is not capable of performing the functions of this very high office as he is supposed to? Thank you.
Thank you. I'm here today for two reasons. One, because I'm the head of the institution who have been invited to appear before this committee today. Two, I'm the person who reviewed this matter. I made the final decision in respect of this matter. And I would believe that the mere fact that I had reviewed this matter, applied my mind to this matter judicially, that would instill confidence in the public and in this committee that there is no political motive in respect of this matter. There is not an iota of proof of political interference in this matter. The issue of political motive is much publicized in the media and is very much self-created. On those first two or three questions that you raised, I disagree with you respectfully that one cannot draw that conclusion that you have drawn. me certain correct was in May, where I did announce that I would personally have a look at the matter and make a decision. When the docket arrived at the MBA, before the docket arrived at the MBA, I discussed the matter with Dr. Pretorius. And I said it's inappropriate for me to make this decision, and that that process must be followed. This is inherent in a letter that was communicated to Mr. Goddard, dated on or about 5 September. I could be wrong, it's either 3rd, the 4th, or the 5th of September, where Dr. Pretorius wrote to Mr. Goddard, and informed Mr. Goddard that he will be the person making the decision in consultation with the Director of Public Prosecution, Pretoria. He alludes Mr. Goddard, or his lawyer, he alludes Mr. Goddard's lawyer to the provisions of Section 179, Subsection 5D of the Constitution, that's the review powers. And that in the event that it would be premature to invoke that section at the time because the decision at that stage had not been made. And then, he further communicated to Minister Goddard's lawyers that self same letter that in the event the minister wishes to make further submissions, that should be contained in a warning statement which should be made to the Hawks. So I had disassociated myself from the matter before the docket even arrived at the MPA. I would have in no way known what decision would be made in respect of the matter. And I deliberately distanced myself from matters to allow DVPs and other special directors to make decisions because of the powers that I have. Firstly, the power to review, as well as the power to intervene. When policies have not been adhered to. So to move on to your question around the statement that I made in respect of the days of disrespecting the decisions of the NPA are over. And the issue of the so-called political motivated claim. I think the mere fact that charges have been withdrawn should be clear to every citizen of this country, and it's still confident in citizens country, that there are processes that are followed in the NPA where people are treated fairly. The same way that you have in your judicial processes, if somebody is charged with a crime in the lower court, or even in the high court, district court, regional court, or high court, there are checks and balances in place. There are appeal processes in place, there are review processes in place. Similarly, in the NPA, these checks and balances are also in place to ensure that people are treated fairly. can ensure or assure this committee that the decision to prosecute, the initial decision to prosecute Minister Godard, Mr. Khashula, and Mr. Pallone was not a politically motivated decision. And further, to re-emphasize that the fact that the charges were withdrawn as a result of a review process that had been followed should be testament to my independence as the National Director of Public Prosecution. You may have had a very good argument made had I persisted with the charges after reviewing the matter. But that is not the case. There's not a single case that has come before my desk that I've reviewed that have done so with any motive but for the motive for the proper administration of justice and the interest of administration of justice. Many South Africans out there that have every confidence in the National Prosecuting Authority. Every confidence that ultimately the rule of law will prevail. The prosecutors in the NPA are very hardworking people who sacrifice so much on a daily basis, facing adversity day in, day out, to deliver justice to the people of this country.
My question. I've made a statement that his understanding of the independence of his office and the impact of visiting Luthuli House is wrong. I have not received an answer. Let me just continue, please. Yes. Secondly, I've made a statement that he personally tried to salvage this prosecution by ordering further investigation. He's not responded to that. Thirdly, I made the statement that he does not have a proper understanding of his duty due to the fact that he did not come to the conclusion that in considering the public interest in this matter, he should have reviewed this matter before going public with it. Please, if you can stop theorizing about the NPA and answer those three questions, the other colleagues, I think, can have a turn.
In my life, I know that the public complains about the long-windedness of lawyers, who include you. I don't know whether it's the problem of the training that we receive as lawyers, but I don't know that sitting here, we can prescribe how people should approach people's approach in answering questions should be. So, advocates, make sure that you give concise answers and answer directly to the questions. Honorable Majaki.
Chairperson, my thing is one that we allow the NPA to respond to questions to the best of their ability, which means that the questions may not be accurately answered to a point where we may actually want, but they are being given an opportunity to answer those questions. We can therefore at the end reach our own conclusions in terms of the manner in which the questions have been answered.
I agree with you. We are entitled to reach our conclusions, but not to expect that our conclusions will necessarily be what should come out of the answer. Proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson. The meeting at the Thule House. It's a Monday afternoon. I'm an hour away from a dentist appointment. Buses are burning. Shops are being looted. Vehicles and buildings are being vandalized. People are being assaulted. It's a state of anarchy. I receive a phone call. From the Minister of Justice, who requests my assistance at a briefing. It's an emergency briefing. I attend this briefing. I didn't attend this meeting at the Thule House to meet with AFC officials. I attended this meeting to meet with ministers in the Security Trust. Of course, I wish that it wasn't that venue. Otherwise, I couldn't be speaking about it today. The meeting was necessary. It impacted on the security of this country. And that's why I attended that meeting. I disagree with you completely, that my attendance at this meeting is indicative of a lack of sound judgment. If, taking my responsibility serious and upholding the security of this country and the oath of office I have taken, question about applying my mind to public interest prior to the decision having been made. When the prosecuting, when the team, when the special director briefed me on the matter, the issue of public interest was very much ventilated. That much I said earlier on. It was a difficult decision to make, Mr. Hall, by the prosecutors. These decisions are never easy to be made. But we must be true to our oath of office. We must be true to the rule of law. At no stage did I admit that there was never a winnable case. I've categorically stated time and time again the briefing that was made to me, there was a winnable case from the outset. Had it been to the contrary, I would have never allowed the matter to proceed. I want to speak about your question around the review, particularly the letter of 14 October. That letter was received by my office during the course of the day of the 14th. I could be speaking under correction, it was late afternoon, I cannot recall, but I only had recourse to that, well, I only looked at the document and studied the document to the back end of the weekend. And the Monday, the presentations were made to me, and the Tuesday. One can hardly expect me to review a matter and not follow up on it. Now the Symington affidavit, or Symington memorandum to be more precise, that you alluded us to earlier on, that came to my attention for the first time as a result of that letter from Freedom Under Law and the Ellen Sussman Foundation. Mr. Nzinyati and Dr. Pretorius, it was my understanding that they did not have knowledge of that memorandum at all prior to that memorandum arriving by way of submissions and or representation. I again received a copy of the letter from the legal team representing Mr. Pillay. And yes, I was deeply concerned when I saw the memorandum. And I wanted to know, where did this memorandum come from? How was this memorandum overlooked? Not only as a result of the memorandum, but of course as a result of the representation by Mr. Pillay and Mr. Mahashula, I directed further investigation. I had to assure myself of the correctness of that. I cannot just accept as mere proof of what's contained in a representation or what's contained in a memorandum as the truth and content thereof. I'll be failing in my responsibility if I did not see clarity on the issue. And it's a direct result of having sought clarity on these issues that I was able to come to the conclusion that I did, and which I feel was the right conclusion that I came to. Mr. Horn, you alluded to the fact that the information such as Symington's memorandum was always available. I was unaware of it. I was completely oblivious to that up until the submissions by Freedom Under Law and the Ellen Sussman Foundation through their lawyers, Weber Wenzel. And then again, as I said earlier on, the Monday and Tuesday. I'm of a respectful view, if you cumulatively look at everything that I've said today, and or individually, you cannot remotely conclude that there was political interference in this matter. Under no circumstances can that conclusion be reached.
Our economy so negatively. Secondly, When you briefed us previously, you indicated that the docket relating to the spy, the rogue unit, is still being considered. What is the situation with that? And would you intervene more vigorously, given what has happened in this? You know, one is always wise in hindsight. Considering what has happened now, we're sitting with the same situation. What has changed with that situation? Chairperson, we also have the issue of the public interest. And there are two issues which you raised earlier. You indicated the political, something about the political government that we're in, that the NPA seems to be drawn into this quagmire. Was that, did you use the word quagmire? Yes, yes. Maybe you can just explain that, because that obviously then also lends to the influences that the public would have and we would have of the NPA having been captured by certain factional interests. We know what's going on. And then it was slightly concerning to me. In fact, a lot of people that you seem to indicate that the Minister of Finance, if I remember correctly, is not a special person. Maybe you could clarify that, or that the economy does not depend on one man when you consider the issues relating to the public interest. Chairperson, those are just a few questions from my side, short and brief. Thank you.
Before you answer, I just want to say that I really want to afford the members ample opportunity to put questions. But if questions are preceded by preambles, we are going to run out of time, because other members have got to catch flights. It's a Friday. Others have got to catch flights twice. But I really want you to have ample opportunity to put questions without preambles. Proceed. And that applies to you, Advocate.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll try and keep as crisp as possible. Mr. Swan, I think the first point I'd like to correct with respect to the issue around prosecutor-driven as opposed to prosecutor-guided investigation. We never have prosecutor-driven investigations. I think that's a term that may have associated with a multidisciplinary approach when the walks were, when the DSO, the school business, was still in existence. But you now have independent institutions that may work together as a collective, and this is called prosecutor-guided investigation. And you are correct that members of the NPA did provide guidance to the Hawks investigators in respect of the investigation into the matter. It's difficult for me to say that the complainant and or the investigating authority and or any of my prosecutors had deliberately withheld evidence and documentation from me, but it's something that I am looking into. It's important for me to look into it. I was alarmed when I saw the submitted memorandum. And I think in respect to your question, how did things get to this stage? It's an important question. Thank you. Your question, how did it get to this point? It's a very important one. You may recall that in my press briefing, I said on the 31st of October, I said, all this could have been avoided had there been closer cooperation and communication and engagement between the Hawks and Mr. Pillay, Mr. Makhashula, and Minister Godan. Now, I accept that when the police approach you to obtain a warning statement, that you have the right to remain silent. Now, I'm of the view that all this could have been avoided had there been proper engagement between the parties on this particular issue. We'd have never been in the situation that we are in now. There certainly would not have been a decision made that Minister Godard, Mr. Makhashula and Mr. Pillay to be prosecuted on the charges that were preferred against them as per the summons that was served on them. And I was at pains to point that out at my press briefing. The status of the Rogelin investigation. I've been advised that investigations are at an advanced stage. Of course, we will ensure that the same thing doesn't happen in this particular matter. I've gone as far as indicating to Advocate Mojokweni, sitting behind me, who heads the National Prosecuting Services, that I'd like to look at the list of all the high-profile cases. And if need be, I'm happy to look at those cases. See if it's necessary for me to invoke the requisite provisions of the National Prosecuting Authority Act and the Constitution, either where policy directives have not been adhered to, and or if it's necessary for me to review those particular matters. I'm doing so because I want to instill confidence in the institution and the work of the institution. I want the public to believe that the institution will always do what is right. We, of course, would prefer to enjoy a greater media coverage on our successes as opposed to our failures. That would certainly instill greater confidence in the community. The issue around the quagmire that I spoke of earlier on, the first point that I'd like to make is there's this complete misperception that the NPA is captured by whom? Can anybody answer that question? Captured by whom? It's rhetorical. The current political climate in the country and all the fingers being pointed towards the NPA does not bode well for public confidence in the institution. But we will continue to prosecute without fear, failure, and prejudice. We will continue to give effect to the rule of law and our constitutional imperatives. Question around the Minister of Finance. think I went as far as to say that the Minister of Finance is not a special person. We find ourselves in a state where we need to get our economy to evolve to a much better position than what we currently find it in. We have a Treasury Department where the very officials that are employed there have been employed there for many, many years. And that's inherent in the leadership structures at Treasury. So the comment that the economy should not depend on one man must be looked at in that context and not in a negative light. So it certainly wasn't meant in a negative light at all. It may have come across that way, and it may be somewhat insensitive in the current climate, but it certainly wasn't meant to be insensitive to the current financial crisis or current climate that we find ourselves in. Mr. Swart, I think I've answered all your questions.
Thank you very much.
If you are still following the order in which you identified us, I doubt it should be. You are entitled to doubt that I'm following the order. I make a list and I follow the list, and if you have ordered matters differently, that is right. Let me proceed. Look, Advocate Sean, you have come for this portfolio committee to answer a specific question and some general questions that are related to that. Being the arrest or serving of summons to charge the Minister of Finance and circumstances around that. That's a specific question you appeared to come and answer. And want you to spend fair enough of time to answer questions that come from members of and in your introductory notes, you mentioned various organizations that laid or lodged complaints and some written letters to yourself, and that organization is represented in this house, the legal entity which enjoys more than 1.1 supporters of South Africans who have expressed interest and confidence in that party. It's a legal entity. It operates under legal constitutional environment. And that organization is the Economic Freedom Fighters, not the Economic Freedom Front. You have attempted to reply to various questions put before you by my colleagues. And in answering some of these questions, let me put to you that despite your current claim that you know the provisions of both the Constitution as well as the provisions of
National Prosecution Act. I doubt if you have ever spent enough time to read and to familiarize yourself with the powers vested in you, powers which you refer to as original powers. Had you been familiar with those, you would have acted differently. And the circumstances that we are faced with would have been avoided. Now, you are saying the Minister of Finance, Honorable Pravin Gordhan, is not a special. Did you say so?
I said that only answers will come at the end. Please put questions based on what you have heard, and you can that on what we have not heard.
Considering that he's the Minister of Finance and his role plays so much of a greater part in not only our economy but on the socio-economic political stability, you would have thought much about the manner in which your office in interaction with various other organs such as the Hawks should have approached this matter, including the manner in which summons were served to the minister, to an extent that in his absence away from home, when the Hawks knew very much where to locate him from, chose to go to his family at his private residence, intimidate his family members, caused so much of trauma on the eve of the most important budget statement which the minister was due to make. I want to put it to you that you owe the minister some apology. Both your action and that of the Hawks lacked basic human decency. That's the first thing. Second point I want to make is that you are saying you were called to meet with the Minister of Justice at the venue which ordinarily you would have chosen not to have had a meeting at such a venue, because that venue happens to be the Tory House. It was within your right to advise the minister of your considered view, and you failed. And you cite a host of circumstances and reasons why you felt compelled to accede to the request from the minister, among which was that you were to meet with a security list of ministers. You were unaware that the president would be present there. So it was a coincidence that the president happened to be part of those that met, to consider what was perceived as a state of complete anarchy as a result of the Fees Must Fall university student protest. I wanted to put to you, and in putting to you, remind you of a poet by William Butler in his Second Coming, which he talks at length on the subject of anarchy, since you introduced the concept of anarchy. Written under Things Fall Apart, the Sender Cannot Hold. I want to put to you that the anarchy you are referring to is as a result of state-inspired action and its failure to appreciate socio-economic situation, especially of university students, in relation to the fee question. And that the anarchy you are referring to has been losing a form, the West, as it indicates, by the state, and for which your office is part of that state. So before you point fingers to anyone for being responsible for instigating anarchy, it's fitting that you admit and you accept that anarchy in this context is state-inspired, and your office is at the center of the impact of the anarchy. I wanted to put before you that among the five concerns that the economic freedom fighter sector general Godfrey Kati wrote to you and elaborated on, among them is the whole question of the unlawfulness of the charges leveled against the commander-in-chief on the basis of unlawful apartheid-style Riotous Assemblies Act number 17 of 1956, which is unconstitutional, which essentially is a continuation of the apartheid-style anatomy of repression, persecution of political opponents, with consequences, Advocate Abrams, of institutionalized state violence. And this is a continuation along the same line. And seated here as a member of this House, with an obligation to see to it that never again shall this country be subjected to any form of unlawful and unconstitutional legislation or act of Parliament, I exercise my duty to remind you once more that an act such as that, enacted under apartheid era, in terms of the universal wearers community, is just as unlawful as was apartheid declared crime against humanity. And yet today you have invoked such law to charge the commander-in-chief for saying things that he said with his mouth. And let me remind you, this is not a coincidence, but it's a systematic, orchestrated state attempt to intimidate its political opponents, including an attempt to intimidate the Minister of Finance. Now, I want to put to you the following question. Having realized that you are empowered by the Constitution as well as the National Prostitution Act with the various provisions, why, despite it was apparently evident that the charge against the minister would not stick, let alone the church seeing a successful prosecution, at the time when you're supposed to have reviewed your decision, and I don't take your excuse that you had no sufficient evidence upon which you could have revised or reviewed your decision to charge the minister before this past Monday. I don't take the lame excuse. It will only be so, and perhaps consider your excuse, was not preemptive and was not based on malicious consideration other than to be based on the law. Now, I hope you'd still have time to reply to the letter the Secretary General of the EFF wrote to your good self. Seeing that you say you are familiar and fully aware of the provisions of the NPA, and particularly Section 179, Subsection 5B of the Constitution, read together with the NPA Act, that we're familiar with those provisions. Why didn't you act swiftly to review the charges? And one would believe that you were quite generally not aware of that you empowered, of such primary and original powers. Noting that you only consider to review such a decision to charge the minister after fact. I want to put it to you again that you have failed to uphold the code of conduct of members of the National Prosecuting Authority. You have failed to uphold it, and as a result, in contravention with the very code of conduct and in contravention with the National Prosecuting Authority Act, specific provisions that requires of you to act and to discharge of your prosecutorial responsibilities without political considerations. I want to put before you that you have put the name, the good name of the NPA and the entire judiciary into disrepute, and further breach the NPA Professional Code of Ethics, as I've already indicated. For all of this, Mr. Abrams, I want to put to you that this is not the view that the economic freedom fighters hold, but because of systematic blunders bordering on wanting to bring the office into disrepute to appease your political those who appointed you, and to appease those that openly or covertly in this case use this very moment to answer your rhetorical question about who could attempt to capture the NPA. Those who would want and have ambitions to capture the NPA are those who have got no respect for the rule of law, who have got no respect for the Constitution and the principle that underpins our democratic system. And those are the ones who would want to capture the NPA and undermine our national sovereignty and sell the sovereignty of this country to the highest bidder. And those have got no respect for the rule of law. And these are the guys who operate in clandestine, who are more of a political syndicate. And you have been bending forth and backward in taking orders from them. As a result, I want to put to you that you are unfit to hold office, and I want to put to you that you ought to be debarred as an advocate, and you have dishonored the office and the profession for you to continue to hold office. And I want to put it to you, you deserve of nothing else, and to be honorable, just as your predecessors, especially in this case, Honorable Bulelani Ntuka, who resigned before being pushed upon committing a mistake similar to the one that we have committed, to declare prima facie evidence and make a person to be judged in a court of public opinion without testing the veracity of the allegations leveled against that individual. He resigned without being pushed. My advice to you is, do the honorable thing, don't wait to be pushed, and resign because you have dishonored the profession, the office of the Director of Public Prosecution. You have disgraced the whole nation by the kind of a decision that you have made. So you are not fit to hold office. Lastly, don't blame it on anyone else. The hostile environment that exists in this house and outside is of your own making and the making of your handlers. And we will never allow this country to descend in anarchy, especially anarchy driven. Honorable Chair,
we offered you an opportunity to put questions and not to cast aspersions on the personality of the advocate.
I'm putting questions. I want to put it to you, lastly, that you should take personal, individual responsibility for bringing the national prosecution and the criminal justice system and the country into disrepute.
Whether or not there is a state-inspired anarchy in this country, it's a debatable political question, and it must be left to the appropriate forum for discussion. The economic freedom factors...
Honourable Chair, on a point of order.
I'm addressing the committee.
On a point of order, Chair.
What order?
Can you please not mediate in the input that I've made, and only use your space and time to comment after an appropriate answer
freely
has been...
I allowed you freely to express yourself.
Has been...
I have to guide this committee. I am saying whether or not there is a state-inspired anarchy is a debatable political issue that must be debated in the right forum. And I also need to draw the attention of this meeting to the fact that the submissions that you made are made in the letter to the General Bar Council requesting that Advocate Abrahams be removed from the role of practicing advocate. And that in response to your letter to the Bar Council has undertaken to appoint a panel of advocates to hear the very issues that you are raising. And you have been requested by the Bar Council to make representation to it to hear your request to them. So I think that you have already raised the matters in another forum, and so let's not duplicate processes. Here we have a different focus altogether. Your matters will be dealt with by the General Bar Council, not by this committee. Thank you very much. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Matthias, you asked Wade relates directly to the Minister of Finance. In respect of me owing the Minister an apology. Our Constitution provides that everyone is equal before the law. And I don't deem it necessary, under these circumstances, to tender an apology. I addressed the issue of the venue, the meeting I attended at the Thule House. I've addressed that during a previous response fairly comprehensively. I don't endeavor to repeat it. I vehemently deny that the NPA is part of any state-inspired anarchy or action. A mere statement to that effect does not suffice. The institution is there to uphold the rule of law, to give effect to the rule of law and the Constitution. And we will continue to do so, irrespective of who the accused is and what station or status he or she holds in life.
That by half past 10 we should be done. So
No, I want to long so two questions only. Advocate Sean, I'll be very practical, Chair. To me, it's a common practice in corporate sector that someone will take package and then be hired due to his special skills and experiences. And I am not convinced what constitutes fraud or corruption on that. It is a normal practice in all public sectors. But I want to talk about the internship. When you receive all those docket, evidence, everything, did we really establish internship on the part of the minister to commit fraud and corruption based on it? I know you have said that the representations were made, that is why you changed. But my question is, if you indeed established that there was intention on the part of the minister to commit fraud, were those representations so powerful that they changed the whole picture regarding the intention to commit fraud? Lastly, I would also touch on what Honorable Matthias have said, to say that in your, what would be your comment to someone who would say the entire case against the Minister of Finance has been a huge blunder and embarrassment in your office, and that you must apologize to the nation and resign? What would be your comment on that one? Because, Chair, we are not dealing with an ordinary person in this matter. It's a city minister charged with the economic nerve of the country. Now, we cannot treat the matter like an ordinary criminal in the street. Maybe let me pause there for now, because some my colleagues have touched
on it. Fall within the principle of equality before the law. Gazia's statement that we can't treat the minister like an ordinary person fall within the principle of equality before the law?
Chair, everyone is equal, I agree, before the law, but I'm saying that instances where the matter, you must treat it with a high caution because of the circumstances surrounding that particular matter. And they have said that the Minister of Finance being in the center nerve of the economy of the Republic. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. With regards to the first question, when the prosecutors who made the initial decision made their presentation to me on their decision to prosecute, I was satisfied on the merits of the matter that there was intention. And yes, you are quite correct. The representation had persuaded me that the minister lacked the requisite attention. But more importantly, it's that Mr. Makhashula and Mr. Pillay had lacked the requisite intention, and so too Minister Godal. So as a result of the representation that I received and the further investigation that I directed, I was satisfied that they lacked the requisite intention to commit the crime preferred against the summons. And no, Mr. Godal was not charged for corruption. That was not one of the counts against him. In fact, he wasn't charged. He was summoned to appear. He didn't appear in court at any stage in respect to the matter. With regards to the second question that you asked, I'm not considered resigning. Touch on the issue of equality, you know, before the law, which I've spoken about quite comprehensively earlier on. We've had Spoon Nabele, for example, who was a former cabinet minister and an ambassador or high commissioner to Australia that was charged. He wasn't summoned to appear before court. He was charged and he had to appear in court. Zuma was charged there to appear in court. Equality before the law applies to everyone, the lowest of citizens and the first citizen. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable National Director, you indicated right just now, in terms of all the good people in the National Prosecution Authority working very hard. And obviously we all agree with that. There are very, very good people, lots and lots of them working in the NPA, and we all respect them. That's a given. But you also said today it was a very difficult decision to make. And I understand it was a very difficult decision to make, and there will be reasons for that. Now, the problem is this. It was always clear that you will be the one that have to come to face the music, because you're the head of the NPA. But the problem is that those who took the decision and were involved with the decision, Advocate Pretorius, Advocate Zinyat, are not here to face the music. And that's why it was asked earlier today, because you made it quite clear throughout the day that you did not take the decision. You did not make the decision. But it's also clear to me that although you did not make the decision, you agreed with the decision. You did not disagree with the decision they took. You agreed with that decision because you quite clearly stated at some stage you were convinced that there was a winnable case when you were briefed. So that's quite clear. You were convinced, you agreed with the decision, although you said you did not take the decision. If I can go to the timeline, you've made it clear that on the 4th of October, you briefed the Minister of Justice, the 4th of October. May I ask, where did this briefing take place? That's the first question. Then, you did refer to the whole incident at the Thule House where you were there on the 10th of October. And you also said that you were invited there by the Minister of Justice. And if I listened correctly, you also indicated that the President was surprised to see you there because you were invited by the Minister of Justice. So what you're basically saying to us is that the President called a meeting. He did not invite you. So you intended the meeting not being invited by the President. Is that correct? I understand that correctly, sir. And then obviously you did refer to Ntuli House. I would think that it should under no circumstances be like that. Independent, head of the public, of the prosecuting authority, should not be seen going to political parties' offices. As a matter of fact, your position is so serious, they should come to your office, whether it's the minister or even the president, with all due respect. But be that as it may. So, on the 10th of October, you had the meeting in the Thule House about the fees must fall thing, and you indicated that nothing was discussed about the case of Minister Gordhan at that stage. So it's a complete coincidence that the announcement was made the very next day on the 11th. It's a coincidence, but that's what you're saying, it's a coincidence, nothing was discussed there, it was just a coincidence. Now, you also made the point that the charges were withdrawn now in the end, and that should be an indication to the public of how credible the NPA is because there are checks and balances in that sense. And I understand what you're saying. And you're looking from your perspective. I'm looking from my perspective and from the public's perspective. The public's perspective is completely different. It believes that the only reason why these charges were withdrawn was because of the outrage and the outcry and the action from the public. Now, if I look at the Constitution, Section 179.5d, if I'm correct, can I look, which gives you the right to review after the decision was taken. Am I correct in saying that the decision obviously was taken before it was announced? Then the decision was taken and you were consulted. Could you not have intervened before it was announced and made public to review the decision? Of course, you said at the beginning it was a very difficult decision to make. Absolutely so. With major implications. Yes, equality before the law. But to charge the Minister of Finance in a country with fraud and theft in any country, it's got huge, huge implications. And I would have thought that one should be not 100% sure that you've got a winnable case, given the circumstances, one should be 1,000% certain and again before you proceed with that. But as I've indicated, you were briefed on those things and you said you were happy, well, you agreed with the decision, although it was not your decision. My colleague referred to the question of intent. And you've indicated now that after you reviewed the thing, the whole situation, and you had looked at some documentation, you were convinced there were no intents. That's after the fact. The question I would like to ask is, when you were briefed and you agreed with the decision beforehand that you announced it, what evidence of criminal intent on the part of Mr. Cortan in relation to fraud, and what evidence of criminal intent on the part of Mr. Cortan in relation to fraud were put in front of you that convinced you that there is a winnable case? Evidence must have been put in front of you of intent. Please indicate what was said and what was given to you as proof of such intent. Last question. As it was in the press before the announcement that this decision to prosecute, it was in the press that Minister Cordan sought legal advice before the decision was taken to put Mr. Pillay on early retirement and to agree to the circumstances there. It was in the press. What steps were taken by the NBA? What action were taken by the NBA to get hold of that legal advice, or to find out what that legal advice was at that stage before the decision was taken to go ahead with the prosecution? Thank you.
Thank you. Let me start off, Mr. Muller, with the last question. My understanding of what the media portrayed as legal advice was retired Chief Justice Yakub referring to legal advice that he had given to Minister Godin in respect of the Rogue Unit matter and not in respect of the retirement of Ivan Pillay. That was my understanding of it in the public sphere. I did not understand it to refer to the retirement of Ivan Pillay. With regards to the intent, I'll make available my comprehensive summary of the evidence which I outlined in my media briefing. I'll make that available to the chairperson, which deals with the issue. The issue of when the decision was made, prosecute. It's not a matter of agreeing that I was satisfied. A decision has already been made. It's not for me, once a decision made, I can only review that decision. So the decision was already made. Does it make sense?
Yes, it makes sense. But why didn't you then feel it necessary to review at that stage?
Mr. Mulder, when you have senior officials that have looked at a matter, and you are briefed on a matter, and you ask questions around a matter, accept that the issue has been deeply interrogated, great deal of thought has gone into the matter. When I reviewed the matter, I agreed with them that there was initially a case. However, as a direct result of the representation, unfair to the timeline. Why didn't I review the matter immediately after the decision was made? I didn't deem it necessary at the time. There was nothing before me at the time that pointed towards Minister Godan, Mr. Pillay, and Mr. Makhashula not having the requisite animus. Had that been brought to my attention at that very moment, I'd have reviewed the matter immediately and overruled the decision. My decision to overrule the initial decision to prosecute was based solely on the representation that was received and the further investigation. And in doing so, in directing that, I felt I fulfilled my responsibility in that regard. This all happened within a period of what, just over 2 weeks, 3 weeks? You raise the issue of the decision to withdraw the charges was not because of checks and balances in the NPA system, but because of public outrage and public outcry.
Sorry, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that's the perception that exists.
Thank you for clearing that up for me. I was a bit concerned. I want to assure the public today that this decision, when I reviewed the decision, and when I declined to prosecute and withdrew the charges, I did so on the merits of the matter and on legal grounds. I publicly stated, when a journalist asked me whether public consideration played any role in my withdrawal of the charges, I said no. And it did not. I trust I've answered all your questions, Mr. Moser.
There's just one that was not answered, but I'll just say that.
Be loyal to our decision.
Our
decision is that no follow-up until...
Yes, it's not a follow-up, it's just a question that the director did not answer to. I asked the question where the briefing took place with the Minister of Justice on the 4th of October.
I think it was at his office. If I'm not speaking under correction.
Listen, may I just say, the 4th of October is less than a month ago. The director should really remember where that was. It's less than a month ago.
It must have been at his office.
I don't think we must test people's memories. Because memory is the ability to remember or not remember. It was from one person to another.
I've answered all the questions. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. I was under the impression that we have invited NDPP and his team to account to us on the current issue of Minister of Finance and Deputy and Honourable. But I'm surprised, Chairperson, a lot of issues have been raised, and that is a bit concerning to me. I only have two questions and a few comments, Chairperson. I won't be long. On the issue of constitutionality or unconstitutionality of legislation, I think we are very much unfair to NDPP and his team, because that is within our domain. They are only implementers. So I don't think Honorable PFF member Matthias is doing justice or has done justice by reiterating on that issue. And then again, on, I would like to inquire from my colleagues have touched on some of the issues I would like to.
Look, I'm entitled to express an opinion, and Member Motap has the right to say whatever she says, but she must not prejudice on my right to speak. And she makes the entire contingent of the AC suspect of the state captures. She must be careful of what she says.
No, I agree with you. You are entitled to express yourself. Honorable Mutapo is here to put your own question, not to evaluate what other members have been saying.
She can't say, careful of what I'm saying. I've got also freedom of expression.
He has no right to intimidate you, but to raise a point of order. So let's proceed.
Not in South Africa. Chairperson, some of my colleagues have touched on issues I wanted to raise. And then what I would like to know from MDPP is that since his tenure of office June last year, how many, you made mention of high-profile cases. My contention is that Section 9.1 talk of, the chairperson has already, I'm sorry to address you directly, the chairperson has already touched on the issue of Section 9.1 of equality clause. How many cases did you take on review in terms of Section 179.5C, right with Section 22C of MPA? And again, which after representations were made by the two gentlemen, and there were issue of voices saying there will be a very big march on the 2nd of November, which has passed. So is that in itself, maybe sort of through you, Chairperson, influence the decision of withdrawing the said case under discussion? Or did you take all the constitutional or legislative imperative into consideration in doing that? And what normally will happen when you are personally involved in the initial prosecution of a case? Will you be able to apply, invoke Section 1795C, Red Book 22C of enabling legislation MPA? Thank you, Chairperson. And please address this issue because the nation is eager to hear. There are ways to say MPA captured, you are handled, you have handlers, and the impartiality and independence of MPA. Please clear this air. Thank you.
Because Honorable Mutapo did not use all her time, I would ask Honorable Mutapo to put a question if you can answer those questions.
Okay. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Thanks, Advocate Abrams, for honoring the invitation to come and to present in the manner in which you presented. I think it is getting clearer now to the people of the Republic of South Africa which this office is actually working without fear, favor, or prejudice. I think we need to be clear at the outset that there is no legislation whatsoever in this country that prescribes Chancellor's House, in TA's office, and so on. But what legislation requires of you is to be as independent as possible and to act without fear, favor, or prejudice. As long as you uphold that principle, then you are complying with the legislation, and the people of this country need to give you the benefit of doubt around your state. And the public must also very well know that the first people who called for your resignation, not fit and proper and so on, are Honorable Breitenberg. Who's Honorable Breitenberg? Is facing charges from the NPA. Ordinarily, it's a matter of fighting a personal battle. So that must be brought very clear to the public, because the public may think that the comments are just a free comment. She has cases against you. If she gets any chance from this side of the podium, she will want to cast doubt on this question. And I think from where I'm sitting, it's just not fair. And I also know, as a matter of fact,
I'm sorry. We have a again, aspersions are being cast on a member. The honourable member knows he can only do that through a substantive motion. I would ask him to withdraw that. We are here to hold the NPA accountable. This is an issue that is in the public domain. I think we've done very well today in elevating, ventilating the issue, and I don't think it's necessary. We raised this issue right at the beginning, it was dealt with. I don't think it is necessary now, Chair, to cast aspersions on an honourable member. Thank you, Chair.
I think the member just referred to a situation. Proceed, but mindful of the fact that we shouldn't cast aspersions.
Let me just tell you that I take offense. That I thought it was longer later, not to worry.
No, Chair, I'm not casting any aspersions. So, I think I'm not cutting any questions. Okay, thank you. So what I was saying is that from where I'm sitting, Chair, I think the director of the National Public Prosecution has done a very good job in terms of the Section 117, that of reviewing decisions that are taken by some of the directors, and that is within the right. I think we've got to look at this thing within a particular context and perspective, and he too must also know that he's generally operating within an environment where many other people will raise a lot of issues. So some of the issues are not generally raised around how the administration of the office is working. But people want to cast aspersions that because he was appointed by President Zuma, and then he too may be captured, because he was appointed by President, the attack is directed to the President. So they will try to come and attack anyone who's appointed by the President. And against that background, you need to make sure, advocate, that you need to be alive to some of those kind of issues that are taking place. Because people today will come and want to speak about supporting the minister, as if they do support the minister. They don't even support the minister. All they want to do is just to cause division in the country, to portray that the country is divided. They are not even supporting the minister. The minister is supported by us, the minister is supported by the president. And if there are issues that are either within the citizen or the minister or anyone, we need to deal with those matters within the framework of the law, which says act without fear, favor, or prejudice. And from where I'm sitting now, I think I'm getting to see that the office is running very well. Our interest as Parliament is that you need to ensure that you continue to hold this office with that particular respect and maintain the independence and never play to this galah of people wanting to raise this matter and that matter, confuse you with the state capture, you are captured, and so on and so forth. Those are issues that are political in nature. All you do, that you need to do, is to open the book, check what the law says, refer to the law. If you need to review a decision, I know for a fact, I worked as a lawyer for many years. There are many cases that are being reviewed. There are many cases that are being withdrawn. Some are not even on the basis of a review in terms of Section 179. Are just on the basis that the police decided to charge somebody when the matter is referred to the prosecutor. The prosecutor realizes, no, we need to withdraw because of X, Y, Z. And the NPA need to continue to act along that line. The NPA need to be very strict around that. But what do I think we have provided today, I think I'm quite satisfied that we'll continue to do the work. I'm quite satisfied that we'll continue to review those decisions. And as it relates to other issues that were raised by Honorable Matthias, I think we may have to elevate all those high-profile cases, look at them, have a special committee to look at them. If they are reviewable, start to review them as early as now than to wait for the people to raise issues in the public as though there is a crisis. So I don't think we are in that big crisis that the way people have alarmed it. I think the institution is still has integrity. From where I'm sitting, I have full confidence in the decisions we have taken and the decision that whoever took that decision, because you must build confidence in those who have taken that decision earlier, but go to them and also infuse in them that we need to take this direction because of this consideration. And at all times, the consideration must be legal consideration. So it shouldn't be about these terms that they are using today that are taking the state capture, this and that. Don't even put yourself into those issues. And from where I'm sitting, we're not even captured by anyone. We did very well to review the decision. And the public must be happy that the matter is over and done with. Thank you, Chair.
In view of the fact that Honorable Bongo is expressing his appreciation that you are acting independently without fear, favor, and prejudice, I'm going to allow put questions before you answer all
questions. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. And to thank the NPA for coming in to really come and assist us to understand the state of affairs, almost creating confusion in the country. And I think today, generally, what we wanted to know was if there was ever a prima facie case, and if yes, why was there no review before? Why was there no review before you announced your intention to prosecute? That intention to prosecute that is actually suspected to have been influenced by political connections that interferes in your mandate. And also the other question is, why did the public interest that led to the withdrawal of charges only matter at the tail end of the events that are alleged to have caused South Africa, according to Honorable Horn, 5 billion in stress, according to Honorable Breitenbach, stress and embarrassment to the minister. You have not fully interrogated the intention of many voices that you refer to as public interest. You refer to the NPA being criticized by senior figures in the ANC, ironically the same ANC that you are now being criticized to have visited. And by the way, there's nothing wrong in visiting the ANC because working for NPA means that you are, and being in government, it means you are actually rolling out the mandate of the ANC as a ruling party. And I hear voices saying that the president must come to you when he's supposed to consult with you. I mean, common sense would tell you that you can't actually do that. So we're not about to actually tell you as to how you're supposed to be working in your office. You have referred to other voices also that criticize your intention to prosecute coming from the opposition. You are being made to account on saying the days of disrespecting the decisions of the NPA is over. Continue to say so. We are not going to relate to you in a way that's almost taking your confidence. Your dignity must be kept intact, regardless of all of this that is taking place. And maybe let me ask you, are you captured? Were you coerced into withdrawing charges? And if yes, why? If no, why do you think that you will find yourself in this state of being related to as not being truthful with the intention of the actions you took in carrying out the mandate of the institutions you're heading? What do you think of the general order of running the country? Because it impacts on what is going on now. Are we running the country in unison? This is one thing that we need to actually ask ourselves with common vision. And these are questions that we need to sometimes pause and ask ourselves, because all of us are participating in running the country, but we never ask ourselves such questions and be brutally honest to ourselves. Is the direction we are taking talking to the needs of the people on the ground, or is it serving the privileged few? So that we don't actually end up running a country that's forever addressing issues that talks to just a few. When in actual fact, South Africa has got such huge problems. You know, when you look around you and you realize that we are grappling with poverty, unemployment, and inequalities in South Africa, you don't hear a voice that addresses the situation of the people of South Africa on the ground. We have commission after commission, a lot of money of South Africans being used on a daily basis to be interrogating each other as to how we are actually behaving and carrying ourselves in offices, when in actual fact the money could be used, or the time that we've got could be used to develop the people of South Africa. Batho ba rona ba South Africa ba maketse gore go etsagala. We are busy realwa every day. Go na le di-case every day. Go gogelwana ko dikgoto every day. Mare taba ko gore re na le di-challenge on the ground. Bana ba rona ba bolawa ke dinyaope mo di-township. A ke utlwile ntswe le reng a re teng ditšhelete tse re ke re bone gore situation ya bana ba ba rona ba bolang ke dinaope re ilo etsang ka tsone. A ke utlwile ntswe le reng re tshwanetse re lwese these drug peddlers. Let's run behind these drug peddlers to see to it that we fix South Africa.
I don't think the director is going to be able to respond to that.
I'm not requesting him to respond to it. I'm just mentioning some of the other major issues that the country needs to be looking at.
Honorable members, let's be tolerant. Let's be tolerant. The member is expressing herself in the way she sees fit. Unless we want to put ourselves in the feet of the members and become that member, and that is not possible. So proceed.
Ke bua ke re batho ba South Africa ba makete go isana dikgotsa re a fekisana everyday na re o starte o berekaneng re tshwanetse re bereke kwa ko ntle kwa batho ba batla they want development ga ba batle ntho tse tsentseng re le busy ka tsona everyday looking at technicalities of bringing each other down. This is not what South Africans are actually expecting us to do. We need to actually have a way of all of us, like I talked about the vision of the country. Where are we taking South Africa? Do we all have the same vision? Or we are in the same country with different types of visions that are actually bringing about confusion? And if that confusion is actually playing itself out among the leadership of South Africa, what do you think is going to happen to the ordinary men in the city of South Africa? Tate Abrams, What do you actually also think about the position that you hold? Because also South African, every time I was in a director of public prosecution, what when the office in 2 minutes out? What happened to your predecessors? Why does it look like this office can never ever be occupied? We have never been in your office. We only hire, or at least the president, who has the process of appointing. But there seems to be something that actually says we can never ever, as a country, have a national director of prosecution. We just want to actually, as a country, start putting our magnifying glass on this and try to understand what is it that is actually happening, so that we can be in the position to serve this country in a way that would actually say, yes, there is a certain level of sanity that would actually help to develop South Africa. And then, in terms of the whole issue of state capture, I think one thing, and we're not here because of state capture, I'm just making mention of it, because to some extent it has actually come from some of the questions that were actually posed to you. Dehore, are we only talking about state capture now, or this state capture has always been there? If ever you're going to be answering this question, then you don't have to answer questions that you feel you're not really ready to answer. But at the end of the day, I must actually say that regardless of what is happening, as a National Director of Prosecution, you have to continue to carry your mandate independently without fear and favor. Thank you, Chairperson.
Before you answer, let me just say that it's really very difficult, because as different members have said, the situation is bedeviled by the political climate. Our focus and interest is whether or not you can act independently without fear, favor, or prejudice. But unfortunately, the political climate and people's views on what is going on politically makes it difficult for us to focus on our concern, which is really answering a legal question. That's why we sit here and talk about the venue where a meeting takes place. I remember a day time when the public protector, the former public protector, attended a DA meeting. Now, one could raise the question, the meeting that you attended at the Tully House, if it had taken at the airport with the same people, or at the union building with the same people, would that materially change the situation?
Yes, it does.
I'm still on the phone. I'm just putting a question.
Answering it does.
Yeah, you will answer when you have the time to do so, but it's not now. The other question is, if there's capture, you correctly said, who is capturing who? But another question is, if the Hawks is captured, if, does that translate in a capture of the director of public prosecution? Because that capturing can be at different level. Maybe the investigating police is captured, or the Hawks are captured, and now who is being captured at what level? These are questions that need to be dealt with. And also there's a question of a timing of the review. That timing of the review is important, but my view as to at what point it must have happened doesn't necessarily mean that my view is the right timing of that. But I think there's another important thing, that in the same way that a case can be before a judge of the High Court, be appealed to the SCA, and be appealed to the Constitutional Court, it means that even in the process of review, there are different stages. And now those stages must be allowed to run their course. Now, if we are going to have a situation in this country where outside forces are the ones that must be allowed to determine the processes within the MPA or within the courts, then I think we'll slide into a jungle, a lawless jungle. Lastly, I think as this committee, we must avoid manipulating the public opinion by casting aspersions on one another or casting aspersions on officials that we have invited to appear before this committee. Because it's in this committee where we have got to ensure that justice is done and seen to be done. And if this committee itself cannot be seen as acting without fear, favor, and prejudice, then I think the people of this country will have the right to doubt that we are still advancing their interests. And I hope going forward we'll ensure that we don't expect of others that we ourselves don't do. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Chairperson, I'm not a member of this committee, so please pardon my ignorance. I don't know what you've just now been doing. Is that a summary of what happened today? Is that a conclusion that you come on behalf of the people or the members of the committee? I would agree that you cannot make such a summary. You cannot make such a conclusion. It may be your personal view, and that's all it can be. You've just now expressed your concern that it should be irrelevant where a meeting takes place. It is very relevant. It's very relevant. Everybody in South Africa knows that political decisions by the ruling party are taken in the Tule House. Well, that is where they are taken. So if the head of the prosecuting authority attends a meeting in the Tule House exactly a week before this announcement, surely the public will ask questions. And it's our right to ask those questions. Now, the head of the NPA indicated that it had no effect on the decision. We take note of that. But surely it's within our right to ask that question, and it is most relevant. I also would like to ask, the colleague from the ANC has made a point as a question that she asked, and I would like just to understand if that question is correct. She made the statement that it's the task of the NPA to roll out government's policy. Is that correct? Did I understand you correctly, sir? Is that correct?
Okay. If you have not had it properly,
yes,
then there's no issue.
Okay, fine. So I heard a member of the ANC in this committee just now state that it's the task of the National Prosecuting Authority to roll out the program of the ruling government. If that is the case, it is shocking, Jeff.
You didn't say that?
You didn't say that.
I'm not going to be answering to you. You should have listened at the time I was presenting.
Both of you are out of order.
Well, that's also fine.
Honorable
Fairworks,
I put a rhetorical question to say, does it matter whether the meeting takes place at the airport or at the union building with the same people that went to the Tule House? I did not take a position on that matter. I left the question open for discussion at the appropriate time, but not today. So I didn't take a position on that. Advocate.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Let me take the opportunity to also thank the members of the committee that have passed favorable comments on the work of the institution and my work as the leader of the institution since my appointment to date. It's deeply encouraging. I omitted to respond to one question of Mr. Mulder. It was the first question that he actually asked. It related to why Dr. Pretorius and Mr. Mbanyati was not here. I anticipated that today's briefing would be a briefing and not the type of interrogation that I've been exposed to today or the questioning. And it's for that particular reason that I didn't think it was necessary for them to be here if I'm only going to make a presentation to the committee. And that's the real reason why they're not here. I didn't here till tomorrow. Let me respond to questions from Mrs. Matopo. Mrs. Matopo, thank you so much for your kind comments. With regards to your question around the cases that I've reviewed since my appointment, I did deal with it early on, but let me just repeat it. In matters that I've agreed with the decisions of directors of public prosecution and special directors, which I've reviewed, these amount to 94. So it's 94 cases that I've reviewed where I have agreed with the decisions of the directors of public prosecution and special directors. In a further 16 matters that I reviewed, I disagreed with the original decision of the directors of public prosecution and special directors, and I overruled those decisions. With regards to your question, if I'm involved in a case or if I've made a decision in a case, can I review it? The law is clear, I cannot. And I did deal with that earlier on in my initial presentation. So where I've made a decision, I cannot review the matter. I think that answers all your questions, Mrs. Matopo. Mr. Bongo, thank you so much for the encouraging words from your side. You didn't ask me any questions, so I can't comment any further, but just to thank you for the favourable comments that you made. Mrs. Majake, you asked many questions. I'm going to try and answer as many as possible, and I know some of them were just comments, and thank you for those comments as well, and I've heard you. Aziz correct, there was a prima facie case at the inception of the matter, and that's why the prosecutors decided that there must be a prosecution in the first place. Now, once a decision has been made to prosecute, only then can you review the matter. You cannot review a matter prior to a decision being made to prosecute. And that much is clear from the relevant provisions of the NPA Act and the Constitution. It's incorrect that I took public interest into consideration when I made the decision to withdraw the charges. Public consideration played no role, and I've made that clear. Of course, around the question of the issue of being captured, or what do I know about capture? I'm not captured by anyone. I've never been captured by anyone. I never will allow myself to be captured by anyone. I've been a career prosecutor with a very distinguished record. I take pride in everything I do. As a prosecutor, as a lawyer, as a leader of the National Prosecuting Authority, I will continue to deliver justice to the people of this country. I will not please anybody, everybody. I will certainly make very unfavorable decisions. I'm not a populist. I never will be a populist. I will never succumb to populism. I think it's important for government departments, particular as envisaged in the Constitution, that they work cooperatively to advance the future of this country. So I really think it's important, and I support the sentiment that you made around working together as a collective to advance the interests of this country. And at the moment, moment it looks like everybody's working in silos. Everybody has self-interest at heart instead of having the interest of the citizenry of this country. And yes, there are many initiatives at play insofar as advancing the poor people, the vulnerable people in this country. I can speak particularly around the NPA. Now, we've approached a very victim-centric service to society, and I've been requested by the Minister of Justice to head a ministerial task team to look into giving effect to the Victims Charter. So we are working with our stakeholders in that regard to give effect to the Victims Charter, as it has not been adequately given effect to since its inception. So we are looking at the most vulnerable people, you know, of society, the victims of crime, the poor, the rural. Yesterday I was at a briefing. I'll spend 10 seconds, if that's okay with you.
Reports of other processes happening.
Okay. Let me see what other questions there are. Chairperson, I assure you and this committee that I have been operating and conducting the business of the NPA and executing the mandate of the NPA without fear, favour or prejudice, and I'll continue to do so going forward. Just the last issue about casting of aspersions. Of course,
Honourable members, in conclusion, let me tell you that I did not summarize anything. I put a rhetorical question on the question of the venue, and I made an observation that you all do, that legal processes should be allowed to run their course, and that includes processes of reviewing charges. I also made an observation that this committee cannot be part of those who manipulate public opinion. And lastly, that it will be important that organizations, whatever those organizations may be, should not dictate to the courts as to what judgments they should hand down, should not dictate to the state institutions as to what to operate. But there are avenues for all of them to make submissions in the appropriate forums. And that is part of maintenance of the rule of law and due process of law. If it's just free for all to interrupt proceedings, to interfere with proceedings, we are going to come across as a lawless state that would lose the support and respect by the people. And in fact, that approach in itself would amount to disrespecting the people of this country. And I hope that this committee will be exemplary, especially that it is charged with a responsibility that is the heart of society, that which is justice. And I thank you very much, Advocate Abraham, for your presentation, and I thank the honourable members for their candid approach to putting questions, because as the committee we reserve the right to meet again on our own without you to do deliberate further on these matters. And if we still have questions, we also have the right to write to you and ask for further explanation. So the heavens will not fall if I declare this meeting closed. Thank you very much.
That the committee will can revisit the matter and it's on,
yeah. And the can even write to him.
Thank you. You have never had a day like this. I thought this meeting was for.
Thank you.